take her gun back. As I was wearing heavy armor and she was in her dress uniform, I barely felt the tug of her hands. Squeezing lightly, I applied enough pressure to the grip of the gun to prevent her from taking it back.
"McGill," she growled in a low voice, "don't you dare do anything crazy. Earth could hang in the balance."
Ignoring her, I frowned at the aliens. Sure, I knew what she was talking about. If we shot a few of them, maybe they'd rule that all Earth was too vicious and humanity had to be put down like rabid dogs. But if these guys were going to kill us all anyway, why should I obey them? Maybe we could warn Earth. Even if Battlefleet 921 had already been given the order, it might be a decade or more before they got around to disciplining us. If the game was over for humanity, I wouldn't mind living a little longer before I cashed in my chips.
"I want to appeal the verdict," I said.
There was a general hissing that went up from the Narbs. I didn't care about them. It was all up to the Galactic now.
"Denied," Salua snapped.
"Denied?" asked Drusus, stepping forward.
"On what grounds? Imperial law stipulates that..."
"Due process has been suspended. This locality is currently understaffed. No appeals can be submitted."
Drusus shook his head.
"Well then, suspend the sentence. We'll comply when the judicial system is operating again."
"Just as I expected," said the Galactic. "There's not a single law-abiding citizen amongst the lot of you. I've seen this sort of behavior far too often along the Galactic Fringe. No acceptance of centralized authority. Dangerously individualized thought processes, and no concept of hive mentality."
"What are you saying, Inspector?" Drusus asked.
"That you humans have no respect for your betters. Worse, you're all cowards. You're driven entirely by self-interest and individualized life preservation. Disgusting."
I couldn't take it any longer. I figured he'd already ordered us to die. How much worse could it get? Stepping forward, I addressed the alien.
"We're not cowards, sir," I said.
"McGill,"
hissed Turov, but I ignored her. Everyone looked at me. I have to admit, most of them looked sick. I wasn't totally sure if that was because they'd just been told this was the end of the line, or if it was because I was talking for them.
"High Justice," I said, addressing the Galactic directly. "We're not cowards. We're quite the opposite. I would put 1,000 Earthmen up against a like number of anything in this neck of the galaxy. We'd win. I know this from personal experience."
The creature made an odd huffing sound. The translator turned this into a staccato laughter.
"You know nothing. Great events transpire all around you. In the core systems there are disturbances. Millions of ships move like raindrops. And yet here, you creatures are oblivious and helpless. You embarrass yourself in your ignorance."
"That might all be true, sir," I said. "But Earth will not self-execute any more than Legion Varus will. It's just not in our nature. Now, if you don't like us, and you have the power to remove two of our worlds from existence, then we'll become extinct. But we'll fight you to the end, both legally and physically. This ship you have, I think we can take her from you right now."
The Galactic turned itself to face me more fully.
"You threaten us? After your death has been sanctioned, I can hardly..."
"Just a moment," asked the Narb prefect suddenly.
It looked at me.
"Being, did you say two worlds?"
"That's right. This is a colony world, and it stands with us in addition to our home world."
"A confirmed confession," shouted the Narb in triumph. "You have committed so many violations as a race, I can scarcely credit it. There will be an accounting, and I will review the vid many, many times in..."
"We didn't violate anything,"
Turov suddenly said. She seemed to be suffering from my disease. She was no longer able to keep her mouth shut now that all was lost.
"You implicated yourselves," the Narb said. "Colonization is strictly forbidden under the articles signed by your species."
"The colony ship left Earth before we signed the treaty," she said. "This system was colonized before we even knew the Empire existed."
The aliens began buzzing amongst themselves. Finally, the prefect spoke again.
"You can
prove this?
Yes, if it matters, she replied.
Why was this information withheld?
We were ordered not to speak, and no one asked us about it.
The Galactic turned off the translation box. Together with the Nerbs, he began discussing the situation. I looked around into the confused faces of my fellow humans. We didn't know what to make of it. Finally, the aliens turned the translation system on again so we could understand them. Instead of the Nerbs, the Galactic himself spoke with us.
This situation is highly unusual and disorderly. The Nerbs tell me they suspect you are correct in your statements. They are at a loss to understand how colonists could have come from your planet to this world undetected now that the Empire has annexed the region. If they had arrived prior to annexation, that would explain the discrepancy.
Good, Drusus said quickly. Then we're not guilty.
Not of that particular crime, no, admitted Zlor. But you are far from innocent. Normally, I would have already scheduled your demolition.
We stiffened in horror. Demolition was a term the Galactics didn't use lightly. They meant that our species would be erased from the universe utterly. In their view, they owned Earth, not us. We were like animals living on fallow acreage. If we didn't serve them well, we would be arrested, and the world would be replanted. The Galactics thought of themselves as something akin to farmers. They managed their worlds with careful, callous hands. Humans were viewed as noisy chattel, just as a farmer might decide to slaughter his livestock and plant something new on his pasture next season. They had no qualms about slaughtering us.
Is there any way we can make ourselves useful to the Empire? Asked Drusus.
I had to admire the Tribune's calm calculation. I was in the mood to kill the lot of them and hope no one found out about it for a while. With luck, we could still blame it on the cephalopods and let them be erased instead.
Certainly not, said Zlor. Why would a zero-level population be awarded further responsibility?
There was a strange sound. It took me a moment to realize it had come from the Nerb prefect.
Inspector, the Nerb said, I'm forced to correct you in this instance. The species in question is not zero level. They are, in fact, a level 2 civilization, technically speaking.
What?
They passed from 0 to 1 due to a series of achievements.
Achievements? Absurd.
I heard the sound again. I thought now that it was the Nerb's equivalent of clearing his throat.
I know it sounds surprising, sir, and much of it is based upon regulatory technicalities, but nonetheless...
Present your case.
Yes, Inspector. There are 3 criteria for statutory promotion to level 1. Seniority in the region, a proven trade good, and a successful defense of said trade good.
Seniority? They've only just joined.
Ah, but a careful inspection of local star systems places them high in the ranking. High enough, anyway.
These novel circumstances could only occur so quickly out here on the fringe of the fringe.
Correct, Inspector.
Level 2. I see,
Zlor said thoughtfully. 2 of his 6 hands touched his bulbous body. He seemed to perform this gesture when he was thinking.
Once they achieve level 1, level 2 is a given. Now that we've determined that they occupied 2 worlds before becoming a member state.
Exactly.
Drusus waved for attention and bowed when they looked at him. As the local representative of a level 2 civilization, he said smoothly, how can I better serve my empire?
One more thing, the inspector said. 2 worlds require 2 trade goods. What is your 2nd commodity, human?
Drusus sucked in a breath and held it for a few seconds. Everyone winced. We knew he had nothing. As we've only just been awarded this status officially, we'll require the normal allotment of time and budget to rectify this discrepancy.
Time, yes. Budget, no.
Zlor snapped. Done. Drusus said, not wanting to push his luck.
"Unfortunately, there's another matter we must discuss," Zalor said. "I hate to do this, but my diligent secretaries are about to remind me I have no choice. I've been charged with finding a local species that would qualify for a difficult role in local governance. Although it will no doubt haunt my internal processes, due to regulations and your new status, I'm forced to consider your civilization for the job."
"We'll take the position, sir," said Drusus quickly. The inspector seemed amused.
"Such eagerness to please. Why haven't you exhibited this pleasant trait before? Could this be related to the threatened demolition?"
The tribune stood tall. "We've simply been misunderstood."
"Very well. Are you willing to accept the burden of local enforcement services? Battle Fleet 921 has been called away for extended duty in the core systems."
Doris only blinked once. I had to hand it to the guy. He knew when it was time to be agreeable. "We absolutely and immediately accept," he said. "It sounds like a wonderful opportunity." Then, without missing a beat, he continued with, "What exactly does our new burden of enforcement services entail?" Chapter 37.
"You've got to be shitting me,"
Carlo said to me a few short hours later. "I shit you not," I replied, chewing my first square meal of the day. "We're enforcers now." We were sitting together in the mess tent in the valley we'd helped liberate so recently. Overhead, the skies were clear. The Naerb ship had vanished back into space from where it had come. I, for one, hoped it would be a long time before I saw another of their hulking vessels.
"Enforcers? What the heck does that mean?" Carlos demanded.
"I don't think anyone fully understands it all yet. But I know that we're the only local species with two populated worlds in this slice of the frontier, which makes us somebody special. This far out along the galactic rim, most species are discovered before they get to the point of colonization. After you join up with the Empire, it's illegal to colonize a second world, and therefore illegal to qualify as a level 2 civilization."
Yeah, but what are we enforcing? Who do we get to lord it over?"
I frowned at him. Leave it to Carlos to start right in with the immediate plan to abuse our new position. "Basically," I said, "we're not mercenaries anymore. We're regional sheriffs. We're supposed to help other races when they get in trouble, and that doesn't just mean beating on them."
"This is so weird. We've been doing this mercenary thing for like a century. How can that all have changed overnight?"
"It's still the same day, actually."
"Funny," he said. "Very funny. Spoken like a true Naerb at heart."
"Hardly," I laughed. Later, I spoke with Natasha. She was in a far more convivial mood now that the Naerbs had left Dustworld.
"You know, James, I was certain you were going to be executed when you were summoned into that ship."
"It'll never happen," I assured her.
"It already did, back on Steel World."
I shrugged and smiled at her. She was sitting beside me and the stars were out. We were on a boulder near the lake shore. The rockfish blew bubbles and stared at us from the inky black water. "What I want to know is how we're going to get back to Earth," I said. Natasha laughed.
"We're not going in that ship," she said,
indicating the cephalopod vessel that sat like a pool of shadow near the shore.
"Why not? Does it smell too much like rotting squid?"
"All the techs have new orders. We're to help the colonists figure out how to fly it. We don't own the ship anymore. Drusus gave it to them. That's why they opened the hatches again and came out."
I eyed the ship thoughtfully. Natasha watched me.
"Are you getting ideas about that Della character?" she asked.
I was startled, but I covered smoothly. The girl was telepathic.
"Don't worry," I laughed. "If I get near her again, I'm keeping my armor on. She killed me twice, you know."
"Good."
When I finally did approach the cephalopod ship, I didn't run into Della right away. Instead, I met up with Centurion Graves. He was there watching the colonist fighters walk back and forth to their caves. They seem to be carrying a lot of equipment out of the hollowed-out Hydra to this new ship. "Was I supposed to report here for duty, sir?" I asked him.
"No, McGill. I purposefully didn't call you."
It was dark again, and the bizarre insects of Dust World were creaking and blatting in the brush at our feet. "I understand, sir. I have a history with these people."
"That's right. We didn't want them to get upset again. The truce is working for now. I heard some crazy things about your little conference with the Nerbs, by the way."
"All encouraging words, I'm sure."
Graves laughed. "Yeah, right. Everyone said they could taste their own balls, they were so scared. When you started mouthing off, they all thought they were dead. But somehow our whole planet got promoted by the end."
"Yes, sir," I said. "Diplomacy is an underappreciated art."
"Okay, all bullshit aside, McGill. Do you know anything about the pullback? I've heard that the Empire is falling apart."
I shook my head. "I really don't know. The Galactic said Battlefleet 921 was ordered out of our area and sent to the core systems. That does seem kind of strange. Do you think all the battle fleets have been pulled back home?"
"Yes. I think that's exactly what's happened. We're on the fringe. If you're calling in reinforcements from the very edge of your territory, you're calling in everything."
"Yeah. You don't think it's serious, do you? The inspector said something about millions of ships like raindrops."
"That sounds pretty serious to me. Worse, they put us in charge locally. That's gotta mean something. Why put an irritating species like ours in charge of local law and order?"
"Because you don't have anyone better who can do the job," I suggested.
"Exactly. What did the inspector say?"
"Nothing much. Are we talking about a civil war in the core system, sir?"
"I hope not, for the galaxy's sake. It probably hasn't gone that far yet. I'm hoping they're just getting nervous. Maybe some of the ancient races are having a little squabble over who gets what."
"You know what I think?" I asked him. "I think the Empire is going to fall apart. How can it survive forever when it's so damned big? In Earth's history, huge empires always fell apart eventually."
"Yeah, well, let's hope it doesn't happen in our lifetimes."
"Why not? I'm sick of Nerbs and snooty inspectors."
"You'd rather have rolling fleets annihilating populations, destruction on a planetary scale, black holes nudged toward inhabited systems for the purpose of swallowing entire stars?"
I stared at him, but didn't answer.
"Yeah," he said. "I didn't think you wanted to see that. No one does. We all hate the Empire. It sucks. But it does provide order. Don't ever believe chaos is better, McGill. We aren't all from the same species. There won't be anything holding us back once we start going for our neighbor's throat. You see how the cephalopods treated the local humans?"
"We're just animals to them," I admitted. "Dogs to be domesticated and enslaved."
"Right.
Speaking of which, what are we supposed to do about the cephalopods?"
"They've attacked an Imperial ship. They aren't part of the Empire. They must be put down. What did you think the burden of the Enforcer meant? It means no mercy, no quarter."
I looked up into the sky. I could see the warm water planet that shared the Goldilocks zone with Dust World. Reportedly, it was far more temperate and friendly than this planet. Unfortunately, it was inhabited by a particularly mean species. "How can we even reach them?" I asked. "We only have a single legion and nothing but lifters."
"You'll see,"
he said. Troubled, I left him there, manning the ramps. A shadow approached me soon after I left the ship.
"I thought you were coming to see me,"
Della said. "I ought to burn you down where you stand."
"Would you revive me if you did?"
I didn't answer because I wasn't sure what I'd do. I knew I was angry with her. "Don't try to stab me again," I said. "I'm wearing my full kit now." She walked alongside me in the dark as I headed back toward camp. She didn't speak. Della, I don't know what you want, but I'm tired and I'm going to bed.
I accept your offer.
Ha! No way.
You're angry?
She asked in surprise. Hell yeah, I'm angry. You killed me, girl. I trusted you and you stabbed me in the back, literally.
Did it hurt?
Of course it hurt. Are you crazy?
You remember the pain?
Yes. She walked in the dark beside me for a time. Finally, she sighed softly.
I'm sorry,
she said.
I knew you would come back. I didn't think you would remember the final moments.
I heaved a sigh as well. It's nice that you apologized and everything, but I don't think I can get over being murdered so easily.
You were turning away from us. It was my duty.
She stopped and stood in the dark. I stopped a few paces farther on and looked back at her. Goodbye, Della, I said.
Goodbye, James.
And that was it. I marched back to camp, flopped onto my bunk, and tried to go to sleep. Even though I was bone tired, my mind wouldn't shut down for a long time. When my dreams finally did come, they were troubled. About a week later, we left Dust World. On the second day of the journey, Graves called me up to the top deck of the lifter without telling me why. I knew that we were scheduled to fly to a rendezvous point where we would be picked up by a transport flown by the Skrull. It wasn't going to be a nice, custom-built ship like Corvus. God, how I missed that ship. It was just going to be a no-frills cargo vessel, but it was reportedly big enough to carry all of us back to Earth.
Come over here,
Graves said, leading me to a porthole. I gazed out into the dark beauty that we called space, timeless, silent, and infinite. I was immediately captivated.
This ship is going to roll over, Graves said. Look down.
I did, and the disk of a blue world hove into view. It was covered in oceans and streaked with white clouds.
Is that the cephalopod planet?
No,
he said quietly.
Not anymore, it isn't.
I saw them then. Hellburners. They fell from the aft end of each of our 9 surviving lifters. They weren't very big, but I guess they didn't have to be. Hellburners was something I'd read about, and I knew that few humans from Earth had ever seen them fall on a world. They weren't fusion bombs. They were much more terrifying than that. Back in school, I'd read of neutron warheads, weapons that killed by burning an area with intense particulate radiation. Neutron weapons left buildings upright, but killed everything that lived and breathed on the surface. The Hellburners were like that, but they worked on a global scale. Most forms of plant life, microbes, and buried insects would survive, but anything sophisticated, anything with a brain, was wiped out. The atmosphere glowed redly until I couldn't see the oceans below us anymore. The destruction of life so complete, and yet silent. Stunned, I watched as a species was erased forever. I swallowed, stared, and swallowed again. Graves clapped me on the shoulder.
Remember hating the squids?
He asked. Yes, sir.
Well, you don't have to worry about them anymore. The Nairb ship wasn't entirely empty. They brought just enough bombs to do the job.
What I just witnessed, it was so wrong, sir, I said. He frowned at me.
It was them or us, soldier. The Empire lost a ship in this system. Somebody had to pay. Just be glad it wasn't either of our 2 planets.
I didn't answer. I nodded and went below. There I stared at a rusty bulkhead while the rest of the regulars around me slept and played games on their tappers, oblivious to the dead world in our wake. Did I feel sorry for the squids? No, not exactly. They'd been vicious bastards who would have done the same thing to us in a heartbeat. But to wipe out an entire living world, I had to admit to myself, I now hated the Empire even more than I hated the squids. Earth changed after we reached home. Mostly it was a good change. There was energy in the air, and ships came down from space almost every day to deliver exotic goods. Wealth was flowing again, wealth like we'd never seen before. I learned that part of becoming the local enforcement world involved an imperial stipend. I'm sure the credit amounts would have been sneered at in the core systems, but out here in our little ghetto of stars, it was an unimaginable fortune. People had jobs again, and hope. We were building things everywhere, spaceports on the ground and shipyards in space. Friends and relatives had done a 180 in their opinion of the legions. We were no longer failures. We'd brought home the bacon and then some. They understood that troops and steel ships had dragged this bounty back to Earth, but I don't think any of them appreciated how hard won our new wealth was, or how difficult it might be to keep the money flowing in the future. For me and my comrades, none of this had come easily. For us, this new era wasn't about spending credits and building new buildings. We'd paid a price in blood to bring back good economic times. The best Earth had yet to see in all her storied history. But would it all be worthwhile in the end? What would the Galactics make us do to keep our status? To my knowledge, no one had even thought to ask the Chief Inspector what had happened to the last enforcers who we'd been chosen to replace. Maybe nobody wanted to know. I didn't have any answers, only questions. I found solace in beer and companionship during my second shore leave. I guess in the end, that's all any of us ever really have. I looked up Natasha, and she made a special trip to Atlanta to see me. That was never a bad sign when a girl spent money to come visit you. Natasha and I went out after I introduced her to my folks, who were busy looking at houses out in the suburbs. They both had jobs again, and I knew that made them happy. They had dreams of buying some land with trees and a half dozen songbirds, real ones, if they could scrape together enough credits. After taking Natasha to a few places, we ended up at a bar full of military types. I don't know why, I guess I felt most at home in that kind of place now.
"How are you holding up, James?"
she asked me when we were alone and settling into our second round of drinks.
"Pretty well.
At the end of the first month, I got a happy surprise. My paymail arrived, dinging on my tapper. When I checked the amount, I discovered it hadn't been reduced. Graves had told me he was demoting me from specialist to grunt again, but apparently it never did fill out the official screens. Natasha smiled and squeezed my hand.
I guess that was his little way of saying thanks for negotiating the Legion out of mass permadeath.
We laughed and had another round. We'd saved two planets while utterly destroying a third. All in a day's work for Legion Varus. Seen from that perspective, I guess I did deserve to keep my rank in full pay.
"I've been wondering about one thing," I said to her about an hour later. "The answer is yes," she said, eyes shining.
I laughed. "Great, but that wasn't what I was going to suggest. Not yet, anyway. I was wondering what kind of trade good the Dust World colonists could possibly come up with. If they can't figure that out, we'll be busted back down to a single system species again."
"Haven't you heard?" she asked. "They have an excellent trade good. The Nairbs have already approved it, and they're making shipments by now."
"What did they come up with?"
"Nanites," she said. "What else?"
I thought about that, and it made perfect sense. They had managed to steal some advanced nanotech from the squids and fine-tune it. Now they were selling their wares to the Empire at large. I was glad to hear humanity's position as a two-system civilization was secure for now. It did seem ironic that the squids could have done the same thing, but had chosen to end their existence rather than knuckle under to the Empire. I guess some species were too proud for their own good. Natasha and I got a hotel room and spent several intense nights together. By the time she had to leave, I was feeling better about life. Before our next deployment orders came, a month or so later on, I'd had time to reflect on how much Earth's role in the Empire had changed since I'd joined Legion Varus. I now suspected that this wasn't all due to chance. Looking back on recent events, I'd begun to see a pattern. Why had the Saurian peoples of Steel World tried to take our single trade good from us? Such things did happen from time to time, but the brazen behavior of the Saurians and Legion Varus itself during the conflict went beyond the norm. The Nerbs had let both sides get away with it, too. Could this lax attitude on the part of the Empire be due to internal weakness far, far away in the core systems? I daydreamed of vast armadas floating in the cold void between the close-knit stars at the center of the galaxy. I imagined millions of vessels struggling, striving for dominance. Seen from the fringe of the Empire, the distant upheavals all seemed remote and yet ominous at the same time. It was like watching a thunderstorm on the horizon and imagining how it must be furiously lashing the ground with lightning. The part humanity played in this galaxy was an infinitesimally small one. Frontier 921 was a tiny, far-flung province that meant almost nothing to the commanders of those vast fleets at the core. If they thought of Earth at all, it was in terms of a category of planets and beings. We were ants to them, and they were a herd of elephants having themselves a stampede. If I'd learned anything during my brief adulthood, it was that being the ant in such situations could be dangerous.
This book is over, but the story continues. Keep listening after the credits to hear the beginning of Tech World, Book 3 in the Undying Mercenaries series free.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Dust World, Undying Mercenaries, Book 2. Written by B.V. Larson. Narrated by Mark Boyette. Producer, Mike Charzik. Copyright 2014 by B.V. Larson. Production copyright 2014 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
And now a free preview of Tech World, Book 3 in the Undying Mercenaries series.
Chapter 1. I was born on Earth, a craptastic planet in the middle of Frontier 921. We were about as far from the core systems at the center of our galaxy as you could get, and therefore we were about as unimportant as a civilization could be within the Galactic Empire. When Galactics visited us, which they rarely did, they invariably complained about how cold and dark it was out here along the Perseus Arm. Our solitary sun was dim and dull to them, as they were creatures accustomed to the nearness of 1,000 ancient stars. As far as they were concerned, we lived in a desert, light years from the next stellar source of heat and life. I didn't care what the Galactics thought about Earth. It was my home, and I loved her. The Imperial types always made a point of sneering at our relative poverty and pathetic tech as well, but that didn't bother me. Throughout my short lifespan, my family and I had been carving out a low-wage living on our backwater world. It was only over the last year or so that we'd gathered enough hard-won credits to begin enjoying ourselves. From my point of view, things were looking up. My parents had managed to get real jobs again, and new hope. As soon as they could manage it, they took their scraped-together fortune and left Atlanta. They moved to the Georgia countryside, down around Waycross. They couldn't afford much land, but managed to find a freestanding place with a few overgrown acres around it. The house was more than a century old, and the scrubland looked like no one had farmed or even trimmed it for nearly that long. What surprised me the most was the structure itself, which was built with actual wood. I didn't believe it until I went down into the basement and ran my hands over the bare, splintery stuff myself. The best part of moving out of the city and into the sticks was that I got my own room out of the deal. It wasn't a bedroom, not exactly. It was more like a freestanding shed, which had been converted into a living space at some point in the distant past. It wasn't a palace, mind you. Curling, faded polymer strips were tacked to the walls as decorations, and the floorboards creaked enough to wake the dead. but I really liked it. I moved in and made myself right at home. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not a freeloading bandit. I'd chipped in plenty of my own cash, and my folks were glad to have me staying on with them. Like most enlisted legionnaires, I didn't want to be bothered with permanent housing on Earth. So far, I'd been deployed something like 9 months out of every year on average, and when I was left dirt-side by the Legion for an extended shore leave with one-third pay, I didn't have the credits or the gumption to set up a permanent residence of my own. I knew that at any time, the Legion might muster out again and take me to the stars to work a new contract. We Legionnaires never knew how long we had with our feet on the ground, so we didn't bother to play house unless we had a family. And as of yet, I didn't. So, in late spring, I lived with my folks and whiled away my free time. For me, vid games were now a thing of the past. I'd been spoiled by real life, real beer, and real women. Games couldn't hold my attention like they used to. In June, I became obsessed with constructing an unlicensed floater in my room. When the damn thing worked right, the floater was a lot of fun. It wasn't much, just a surfboard with a simple gravity-repelling unit attached. A second-hand repeller had about a 300-kilo lift rating, which was enough to get me almost a half-meter up off the ground. Repeller units were easy to come by these days, as Earth had credits, and alien traders now visited our planet with regularity. They no longer treated us like third-rate losers. In the eyes of the traders, we'd risen to the status of first-class hicks. I hugely enjoyed cruising around the back lot on my floater, taking it out over the local Satilla River with a drink in one hand and a steering wire in the other. It was fun, and the summer passed quickly. Now and then I was even lucky enough to coax a few lady friends into accompanying me back to my tiny shack. They always crossed my threshold diffidently, like house cats that suspected you were taking them to the vet. After a couple of strong drinks and a ride or two on my makeshift floater, they usually spent the night. After 3 months of wasting time and money, I had to admit I was becoming a little bored. It was August, and anyone who spent much time in Georgia can tell you that hanging around in a converted garage in the last days of summer can get to be a little extreme. I'd gotten into the habit of leaving the cooling unit blowing at night, but it had begun overheating and throwing breakers. I didn't want to waste credits on a new one, as it might be years before I'd use it again after this shore leave was over. Left with nothing better than a whirring fan, I made the best of it. I kept the windows open, the lights dim, and the fan aimed so it blew directly on my sweating skin. It was comfortable enough once you got used to it. One Thursday night in August, a tapping sound began as someone tapped on my door. I was dozing, and it must have been around midnight. I startled awake, spilling fresh beer on my heavily stained carpet. Shit, I muttered, hauling myself up. I shook my head and padded on bare feet to the door. I automatically assumed it was my mom, coming out to ask me something that could easily wait until morning, like whether or not I thought we needed more milk for breakfast. Lifting a hand to the door, I paused. I could see through my half-assed window screens, and I noted with surprise that the tiny light over my parents' back door was out. That wasn't surprising in and of itself, as lights in the country attracted more bugs than anything else. But if it was my mom on the other side of my door, tapping insistently, wouldn't she have flipped on her porch light to guide her on her way across the yard? Frowning, I put my hand on the rattling, worn-out doorknob. Yeah, my shed had real, honest-to-God doorknobs. They must have been a century or more old. But I hesitated. The tapping sound repeated itself. I considered ignoring it. Tap, tap, tap. I shrugged and threw open the door. In the same sudden motion, I flicked on the light. I don't know who I'd expected to see standing outside, but I was surprised it was Natasha.
Hi,
she said, looking nervous. She tried to smile, but it flickered out. I'm not very good when I'm surprised. I don't have an automatic happy-time grin on my face when the unexpected happens. Maybe that's because I've been killed a lot. I don't know. The Legion Sykes gave us a course on that kind of stuff before every deployment, droning on about the long-term effects of our chosen occupation, but I'd never listened to any of it. Natasha took in the blank look on my face and my lack of a greeting and reacted in the worst possible way. Her smile vanished, and she did a U-turn. "Sorry," she snapped. "I shouldn't have crashed your party." Head held high, she marched away into the dark. She took about 3 quick steps back toward the main road. I could see the dark hulk of her car out there, skids down on the pavement. "Hey, come back," I called, half laughing. "You surprised me, that's all." She looked over her shoulder and paused.
"You've got someone in there, don't you?"
"Nope. Not even that damn tomcat that keeps coming around." Frowning slightly, she came back to my door and craned her neck to look past me.
"It's awfully dark in there. Don't you have any lights?"
"The cooler is broken," I said. "Lights make heat, and besides, I was just falling asleep." She looked into my eyes again.
"Maybe I should come back in the morning."
I reached out and touched her arm. I didn't grab her, I just rested my hand on her elbow. Beckoning with my other hand, I gestured toward my couch. "Come on in." Natasha stood still, but her eyes were running over me and everything else. I was a mess, and so was my place. I'm the kind of guy who shoves everything into the closet when a girl comes over, but I hadn't expected one tonight. I let go of her arm, heaved a deep breath, and walked to my crappy little box fridge. I'd gotten it from a Legion surplus shop for cheap. I grabbed out a beer and cracked it open. I didn't even bother to look at Natasha. Maybe it was the heat or the time of night, but I was done feeding this park squirrel peanuts. She could come in or go. She finally came in. I handed her a fresh brew and found her a place on my couch to sit down. The first thing she did was notice my floater, which I was using for a coffee table.
"There aren't any legs on your table," she said.
"Yeah, cool, isn't it?
You spent money on repellers just to build a table?"
I laughed.
"No, it's a vehicle. I fly it everywhere. It's great fun. If you're around tomorrow, I'll give you a ride to the lake."
Natasha gave me a reproachful glance at the mention of her being around in the morning, but I pretended not to notice. She and I had had a thing going for years now. We'd never been in a really tight relationship, but we'd enjoyed a number of fine nights.
"Your place smells a little moldy," she commented.
"Sorry. Hey, you want to tell me why you came all the way out here to see me?"
"I wanted to know how you're going to vote."
I frowned, having no idea what she was talking about. "I'm not much into politics. Is there a district election I should know about?" She laughed. I liked her best when she laughed. Her face lost all caution and worries during those few seconds, and that made me smile.
"I'm talking about the Legion vote," she said. "You must have made your decision by now."
You're
kidding me," she exclaimed, setting aside her beer. "You turned off your tapper again, didn't you? What if they summon us to the hall?"
I lifted my arm so she could see the tapper embedded there. I poked at it, and it came reluctantly to life, making my skin glow with organic subcutaneous molecular shifts. "I did some mods," I admitted. "You're the tech. Check it out." I showed her my custom settings. I'd blocked out all non-critical span from the Legion and from everyone else.
"That's against regulations," she complained.
"It's my shore leave," I said. "You techs should appreciate that. If the Legion really wants me, they can get me with a priority message. In the meantime, anything non-critical gets dumped." Natasha shook her head and made clucking noises with her tongue as she tapped at my arm. "Hey," I complained, "don't mess up my settings."
"I didn't touch your settings," she said. "I just brought up today's report. Check it out. Top of the list."
I sighed and grumbled as I scrolled around with my index finger on the inside of my forearm. I tapped at a Legion-wide announcement and read what it said aloud. Friday night, 8 p.m. is the deadline for voting. As a specialist, you're allowed 2 votes as per Legion bylaws. If you've abdicated, you're... I frowned and stopped reading. I looked at Natasha. What the hell are we voting on?
To join hegemony,
she said in exasperation.
All of us?
Yeah, she said.
All of us. All the legions have been given the option. We can either stay independent, or we can sign on with Earth's central command.
What brought this on? She laughed, but this time I thought her laugh was tinged with bitterness.
If I had to guess, I'd say you brought it on, James McGill. You talked the Narbs into making us enforcers, remember?
Yeah, sure, I said. But what's that got to do with folding Legion Varus into hegemony? She shrugged.
I guess as enforcers, Earth has a new source of credits, a new service we provide to the Empire. We don't all have to play mercenaries to the stars anymore, and hegemony expects to be called upon to do some enforcing at some point by the Narbs, or even by the core systems. Hegemony needs experienced troops.
Experienced troops? I echoed. That's us. The independent legions. There's no one else who's been out there.
Exactly.
I thought about the situation for a time. The more I thought about it, the less happy I was. I didn't want to join up with hegemony. Those guys were self-important pukes.
What if we say no?
I asked her.
I don't know, she admitted. No one does. They might disband us. Or they might hire us and send us out anyway. No one really knows how this is all going to go down.
One thing's for sure, I said, beginning to work my tapper. Earth isn't getting all these credits from the Galactics for us to sit on our hands. They'll want us to do something soon.
Natasha nodded, then frowned as I kept working my tapper steadily. She scooted her butt over the couch to see what I was doing, and I let her. I'd gone into my settings first and done a full reset. When it booted back up, I tapped in a message and selected the send all option. It questioned my sanity and I confirmed the choice twice. I hit the final acknowledgement before she could stop me. Her tapper beeped and she opened the message I'd just sent to her and everyone else in the Legion. Her jaw sagged.
You're crazy, she whispered. You can't do that. You can't spam the entire Legion at midnight.
I just did. Natasha read my message on her own arm while I downed the rest of my beer and got out 2 new ones. When I returned to the couch, she waved me away at first, but after a few seconds of reading, she took the second beer and guzzled it. She shook her head and laughed. Then she began reading the note again, out loud this time.
As one of only 2 individuals in this Legion who was personally involved in negotiating Earth's new status, I urge my fellow legionnaires to reject hegemony's offer. Let's stay independent and free rather than chained up by sanctimonious dirtsiders who think they know the stars better than we do. Specialist James McGill, Legion Varus.
It's just one man's opinion, I said, shrugging. Natasha laughed again and drank. I joined her.
I didn't have to come all the way down here to know your answer, did I? She asked. All I had to do was think about you, and I would have known how you were voting.
Somehow my arm had snaked its way around her shoulders. She sat up close to me, and I could feel her warmth. Usually I avoided warmth of any kind in August, but this was different.
You're going to get into trouble, she said.
I scoffed.
What are they going to do? Kill me?
It was a favorite joke of all the legionnaires, and it never failed to garner a bit of a chuckle from our fellows. We often died in the field, but we almost always were returned to life. That sounded great, until after you went through the agony and helpless terror of dying a few times. Natasha and I ended up making love on that grungy couch. We fell asleep immediately afterward. Outside, the katydids buzzed and the fireflies floated on warm, humid air between mossy trees. Chapter 2 The Georgia dawn pinked the skies several hours later. I was startled awake when a fist hammered on my shack's door, rattling the windows. Natasha and I were entangled. We separated and stood up. Natasha grabbed a shirt and pressed it over her bare breasts. It wasn't smart cloth, so it didn't cover her very well. "Who's there?" I said gruffly, stepping to the door. Automatically, I stood to one side. Natasha hadn't moved or said anything. She was just watching me. "Open up, McGill. Military police." Frowning, I threw open the door. Natasha pulled more clothes on quickly, but I stood there in boxers, uncaring. Outside, there were three men. The two in front were beefy, one well-built and the other one with a gut that overflowed his belt buckle. In the rear was a thin man with only a few wisps of curly hair around his balding head. He had eyes like a possum. It was the thin man in the back who spoke up first. "What kind of shithole is this, McGill?" he asked me. His eyes cruised around my humble home. "We were led to believe you were a specialist, but I'm seeing an inbred knuckle-dragger in a stinking shack. I'll have to report back that we visited the wrong damned man." I nodded to him. "That's right," I said. "You came to the wrong house." I began to swing the door closed into their faces. A hand shot out and stopped it.
"You're under arrest, funny man," the fat one said.
I took a second to take in their uniforms and ranks. They were hegemony. The patches on their shoulders depicting blue-green globes told me that. Judging by their other insignia, the front two were regulars, probably reservists called up for active duty. Since Earth had been announced as an enforcement branch for the Empire, hegemony had panicked and mobilized every reservist they had. The thin guy in back was older and wore a specialist's markings. They were all security detail, MPs. "Arrest?" I asked. "What's the charge?"
"You'll be briefed in the station in Atlanta," the thin specialist snapped. "Come with us. Wait, who's that with you?"
"A friend," I said, glancing back at Natasha. She still hadn't spoken. All three men leered for a moment at Natasha. This annoyed me. Her legs were bare and my T-shirt didn't cover everything else. It was the first thing in the morning and I hadn't been arrested for months, especially with good cause and paperwork. The situation struck me as wrong somehow.
"This is about the message I sent last night, isn't it?" I asked. "Who signed the arrest order?"
"Are you coming willingly or are you coming in manacles?"
"I'm not hegemony," I told them. "I'm Varys. We're independent. Send some MPs for my legion and I'll go wherever they take me."
"I think you fail to grasp the situation," the leader said, shaking his head with mock sadness. "This is a priority arrest, and I have my orders."
"Screw your orders," I said, becoming angry. "They're illegal. You don't have any jurisdiction here. Get district cops or my own MPs. You can't come here and demand I submit to arrest without any authority to back you up."
The skinny guy finally stopped ogling Natasha and glared at me.
"You off-world types always think you're hot shit, don't you?" he asked. "Well, all that's over with now. It's time you became accustomed to new masters. Gentlemen, arrest this—"
I slammed my door in their faces and threw my shoulder into it. I'm a large man, easily larger and stronger than any of these dirt-siders, but there were three of them. The door bucked against my shoulder and daylight flashed through the crack a moment later. I heard cursing and one of them shoved a truncheon through the opening.
"What the hell are they doing?"
Natasha hissed at me.
"Climb out of one of the back windows. I don't like this and I'm not letting these jokers arrest you too."
"You're holding them off for me?"
she asked, surprised. The door bucked harder than ever, and I was jostled backward. I almost lost my stance, but managed to get myself set again. The truncheon sticking into my shed crackled with energy. The bastard holding it had switched it on. I looked at Natasha.
Go on, will you?
She shook her head and stood behind the door.
You're going to need a witness.
I growled in frustration. Timing my next move with their next shove, I threw the door open again. The fat guy fell onto his face at my feet, and his sidekick staggered in surprise. The thin leader in the back was breathing hard and baring his teeth. They hadn't been in a great mood at the start, and now they were truly pissed. I took a step or two backward, and they rushed me. Forever afterward, I'll never be sure why I decided to resist them. I guess it's because I knew they were in the wrong, and abusing their authority. Sometimes that happened with cops of any kind. I understood they didn't have easy jobs, but these guys had rubbed me the wrong way. I wasn't thinking anymore at this point. I was reacting, violently. There's something different in the way a star man faces a fight after he's died a dozen times, or 100. It starts with an odd expression Legionnaires call the dead man's stare. Maybe the look comes to Legionnaires because we've been gifted with an unnatural knowledge of death. I've had many bitter experiences that should have been forbidden to the living, but which to a man like me had become almost familiar.
Don't do it, James, Natasha said, reading my state of mind accurately. I'll be fine.
I didn't even look at her. I didn't really hear her either. My eyes were wide with the shining whites revealed all around. My face was otherwise strangely blank. Only my staring orbs revealed the intensity of my mood. Now, don't get me wrong, I was pissed, but it was a different kind of pissed. I was in a cold state, with full certainty of mind. I had a confidence in battle that these others couldn't possess. The fat guy climbed to his feet and stepped forward, his face sweating and his eyes blazing. He lifted his truncheon, and it sizzled with energy. One touch would numb a limb and daze the mind, but I ignored the weapon, concentrating instead on the man who held it. The start of the fight wasn't fair, not really. But then fighting isn't usually about fairness, not to my kind, the brethren of the walking dead. As Fat Boy took his first steps in my direction, with his sizzling shock stick in hand, my foot snapped out, kicking the floater I used as a coffee table. Gliding through the air with great force, the floater caught the MP in the side of the knee, a bad spot. There was a double crack, and he went down on his face, keening.
Crazy redneck,
he moaned from the floor. The second guy at least looked like he worked out. I stepped to meet him as he dropped his truncheon and reached to his belt to drag his sidearm free. A gun, that raised the stakes. I knew they might well kill me now, but I hardly cared at that moment. If I killed just one of them, that man was going to endure his first death with all the associated terror and pain. As hegemony men, the MPs had been copied and stored the same as I was, but their first death experience would linger with them for the rest of their lives. To me, a death was like a bad day in the dentist's chair. Nothing to look forward to, but hardly life-changing. The way I looked at it, as long as I killed at least one of them, I'd won this fight.
Shit, James, shit,
Natasha said. But she joined the fight when she saw the guy reaching for his gun. She stepped to the thin specialist and kicked the guy while he lingered in the doorway. She missed his balls, but nailed his narrow gut. The specialist reached for her, and the two struggled. She tried to trip him and almost managed it. I had to admire her pluck. She was a tech specialist, not really a line combatant. He finally straight-armed her, and she flew right into my toolbox, which crashed to the floor. Her attack hadn't been spectacular, but she'd managed to briefly distract them. The muscular goon glanced back to see what was going on with the group's commander, and I took the opportunity to arm myself. Another behavioral trait that's often shared by men like myself was a tendency to hide weapons around our residences. We typically collected guns, knives, just about anything that could be used to perform a violent act. I've read that people who've experienced starvation are forever afterward fascinated by food and tended to hoard it. I was like them in my own way. I reached into the couch cushions and drew a machete from underneath them. When I'd bought that blade, I'd told myself it was to chop down the brush on my parents' back lot. But part of me had known better. I'd bought it and